Well, hello again there, folks. It's been quite a while since I've posted a video. A lot's happened. I've got quite a bit to say, I think. About a month or so ago, the anti-white NGO Hope Not Hate carried out a big reveal. They revealed who I was. They had pictures of me, and they carried a hit piece and all of the rest of it. So I got the dox treatment. And when I was reading through the preposterous like rubbish that they had posted, I actually thought like it's very strange the way they've tried to frame me here, obviously as this sort of wild-eyed crazy extremist. And I was thinking like this just isn't me though. This isn't really what I'm about. This doesn't, and obviously it doesn't because it's there to sort of it's there to make me look like a lunatic in the Google algorithm. And they're allowed to do this, of course. They're allowed to get away with this because they're just part of the state. They're part of the power structure, and they're there to destroy people or make life hard for people or make whatever. They're utter scum. And what I thought was, it was just the way that I didn't really sort of recognize anything what they were trying to do, except for do the dirty on me. And it just happened that I was reading a book while this was going on, called No Country for Old Men. And what I thought was interesting, I mean, most people are going to know, they'll have maybe seen the movie, which is really famous. I mean, the book's quite well known as well, and I thought it was an interesting sort of juxtaposition because as I was sort of all of this stuff was breaking loose on the internet, I was getting messages left, right, and center. At the side of the desk, I had the copy of No Country for Old Men, which I, by Cormac McCarthy, which I'd been reading, and one of the things that I began to realize was that when I was reading the book, I was kind of putting myself in the shoes of Sheriff Bell, who was played by Tommy Lee Jones on the movie. And of course, if you remember the gist of No Country for Old Men, it's set on the Texas-Mexico border. It's about Mexican drug cartels, and it's about a man called Moss who comes across a like a shootout between the cartels and rival gangs, and he does away with a bag full of money. And then you have this sort of psychopath, force of nature, Anton Chigurh, goes after him and kills everybody. And from the perspective of Sheriff Bell, the Tommy Lee Jones character in the movie, the real heart of the story is that you've got this sort of man who's getting on a bit. I mean, he's older than what I am, but he's kind of looking at the unraveling of society, of America, of civilization, depending on how you want to look at it. There's always different ways you can read McCarthy, which is why he's so interesting. And what he's really getting at, what he laments, is that the world is becoming ever more chaotic and hard to understand. And he looks back on the past and he thinks, well, you know, it's not just that everything was like lovely and bucolic in the past. There was violence in the past. He's talking about his youth, and the Texas police force. But he's saying like, you know, there was 42 murders in this county, and now there's like we don't even know how many, and it doesn't matter because we can't solve them anyway. We can't control who comes across the border. The morals of the society are falling apart, and what he represents is this kind of confusion at this great unraveling of society. And I feel like that is kind of what I feel like as well. And it's not so much that I'm this extremist, I'm very much a centrist, and it's the world around you that's gone. The world, you know, the world that I used to know has kind of just been systematically destroyed as a matter of policy. It wasn't this emergent thing, it was done by policy. And you're left in this situation where you're kind of, you know, observing it. And you can see straight through all of the lies, and you'll comment on the lies, But the madness and the craziness, the amount of sociopaths, the carnage, it just keeps heaping up. It just keeps getting worse and worse. And I think that's what McCarthy touches on. I think that's what Sheriff Bell touches that. And it was kind of interesting at the time, when the Hope Not Hate article came out, that I just happened to be reading No Country for Old Men. I just happened to be kind of thinking about all of this. And what struck me was that in their hit piece, Hope Not Hate were trying to put me in the sort of position of somebody who was potentially sort of exacerbating and compounding the problems that we have. In other words, the person, the people, because it's not just me, it's people like me, people who think like me, most of the people who will watch this video, like the core ideals of the society, of the civilization, they remain sound, but they remain under threat from people who think like me or you, people who are far right. They are the destabilizing factor in this system. They are the catalyst upon which this system could become faulty and unbalanced and begin to sort of crumble and fall apart that way. And I just thought this was so sort of unhinged, because from my perspective, I'm in this sort of Sheriff Bell position of kind of looking at all of this stuff going on, the rising tide of barbarism, the casual barbarism. We remember, I remember in the early 90s, there was a thing that came up again last year, was the Bulger killings, when the two young lads killed a little toddler horribly. It was a horrible thing. Everybody involved was white, and the Bulger killings, I remember it was on the news like for weeks and weeks and weeks. It was on for months and months. It was like this national crisis that this has happened in our country. Like this, how could, what went wrong? What went wrong, like, systematically, that these two boys murdered another little boy like this? Like, we have to look in, we have to find out what went wrong. We have to find out, like, if this can happen in our society, we're on the wrong path and we need to figure it out, and all of this kind of thing. And you just think, like, the barbarism that we see now, you don't get that anymore. You don't get that response anymore. It's become kind of downplayed and normalized, because there's so many sort of, it's a political minefield, and it's politically incorrect to address exactly what's gone wrong and what's happening. And so it's this kind of flood of craziness and barbarism and sadism, and violence that we're just not used to. And you wander around trying to ponder it and trying to wrap your head around it, like Sheriff Bell. It's like what Cormac McCarthy was trying to say in No Country for Old Men. The craziness, the sort of the great unraveling is here upon us. And it's kind of it's such a thing to then put that on the people who are in the middle of it, and then blame them, blame the ones who've noticed, for the problems, for being the destabilizing factor. But when we sort of talk about Cormac McCarthy, of course, and No Country for Old Men, what you'll get into there is the idea that it used to be better than this within reason. And when I was reading No Country for Old Men, I began to notice a few little things, a few little sort of Easter eggs that Cormac McCarthy put in, which were related to an even more bloody and violent book set in the Old West called Blood Meridian. And I read Blood Meridian back in November, and it was, it gets a lot of hype, and it deserves it, because it's this sort of mythic beautifully, amazingly written, mythic state of nature bloodbath. I mean, it can't be turned into a film because it's just too violent and too gory. And you have the famous character, Judge Holden in it. And you've got all these themes where he may be this Gnostic demiurge, he's violence incarnate, or the devil, or what? I mean, we could get into all of that, the whole of that time. Suffice it to say that Blood Meridian is man in a raw state of nature, in the Thomas Hobbes sense. There is no authority there. It is just men. The story is that they go scalp hunting. We follow this young lad who goes with a party of scalp hunters, and it is just the raw Thomas Hobbes state of nature, the war of all against all. It is unbelievably and unrelentingly bleak and brutal, not just in the violence itself, but even the landscape seems hostile, where you get all of it's either frozen and barren, or it'll be baking hot, and there's bones and skulls and blood cracked onto the desert sands. And it's also set in sort of just to the west of where No Country for Old Men. And so what you have here in Blood Meridian is just man in a pure Hobbesian state of nature, the war of all against all. There's just kill or be killed, because there is no higher authority. The government and civilization hasn't yet reached that place. It hasn't managed to civilize it, so it's kind of just a free for all. And McCarthy describes it all in these beautiful mythic, poetic sort of language, which is just absolutely stunning to read. It's one of those books where sometimes you just pick it up and start flicking through it just for the sheer pleasure of it. I mean, it's bloody and it's violent, but it's kind of hypnotic in the way that it's written as well. And so this is what's happening is, towards the end, you see, you begin to get the sense that there's going to be fences coming along. There's going to be, this is the very end of it. Civilization is eventually going to come along. And so what I noticed in No Country for Old Men is that there's many passages and many little hints from Sheriff Bell where it seems to allude to an earlier state of the West, which is like earlier still, which is coded in a certain way, that he's talking about a time, a primordial time before the civilization, before the federal government, before the police, of which, of course, he is there. He is the law. He is the lawman. He is the representative of the state to prevent the state of nature coming into being. But what we're seeing here is a kind of cycle, I would argue, coded in and connecting the two works of Cormac McCarthy. I would say that what you see is, in Blood Meridian, you have the primal, almost primordial violence of man. And then you get this era of civilization. You get the era when the Leviathan can lay down the law and it can bring civilization. But then what you're told in Blood Meridian is that the Judge Holden, who represents sort of death and chaos and war, as the natural state of being, he will never die. He will always come back. And so in No Country for Old Men, we're now on the other side of this. The cycle is now coming to a close. And we see that, yes, we had a brief time, a brief period where we kind of had the veneer of civilization. We kind of got on top of it. We beat the state of nature. The Leviathan held back the tide of carnage and violence. But now, at the representative of the law, of that, now can't cope anymore. He's too old. And there's younger cops coming in, but it's too much. The chaos and the violence is now too much. So the state, the authority, the politicians, the power structure, it can no longer handle it. What is beginning to be an unraveling of civilization itself. And so you see the symmetry between the two books, one at the beginning, the primordial state, and then you get this brief sort of window where things are kind of okay, and you get your Chevrolet and your Suburbia and your 2.2 kids, and the police will arrest the bad guys and the murders will be solved. And then you begin to get where it can't cope anymore. Slowly but surely, in No Country for Old Men, as set in 1980, it's struggling now with the rising tide of madness and barbarism. The old times are coming back. The state of nature is gradually returning. The unraveling is here. And it's kind of hinted at and coded at, particularly in the final few passages when Sheriff Bell talks about following his father as if he was in the Old West through a canyon. And it's cold, and the language is more like the language in Blood Meridian, and the fire is there as well, which is a constant theme in Blood Meridian, is the judge lecturing everybody around the fire at night, lecturing them about how violence and war is the natural state of things, not peace and civilization. And so all of this brings me back to kind of where we are in England. You know, when you look at the headlines, when you look at the stories, when you look at the general politics in England. Now, of course, in the West, in America, that there's a point to be made there where it is some like younger country. You cannot point back to the 1800s in the 19th century on the British Isles, really, and say that there was this sort of primordial state of nature. There just hasn't been one like that in England for a very, very long time. You can say that the state was brutal here and there and there were some terrible things done, fair enough, but there was not an absence of that. There was not an absence of state authority. We've literally had kings and queens forever, before even Parliament. And so that was always there. We've known that for a long time. But when we look now at the headlines, we look at the incessant sort of inability or just refusal of the state to enforce its will on the population. Now, it will on the natives. And this, again, compromises the sort of the legitimacy of the state itself, is that if it has a two-tier sort of system, if white people are getting hot, that's not a solution. That means it's becoming illegitimate. And you see these headlines now. You see these stories coming out now where we're at this ourselves, this sort of unraveling of normal society. These headlines about civil war, you know, these headlines of the one inquiry after another into so-called grooming gangs. Just the casual sort of CCTV footage of people being randomly murdered and butchered and people running around knives. And all of this is now heaping up. And it's this kind of rivers of blood, as Enoch Powell said. The rivers are starting to get quite deep, aren't they? Or it may not be a river, but there's quite a bit of blood around now. And ultimately, who is responsible for that, you know? Well, at the end of the day, it's not people who merely point it out. At the end of the day, these are decisions that have been made over the course of decades. Ultimately, what is the destabilizing factor in all of this? Well, the destabilizing factor in all of this is actually the state and the power structure and its sort of NGOs like Hope Not Hate, who prevent a natural balance and an equilibrium being brought back into the equation. And so what we have in this, and I think this is why it resonated with me so much, the Cormac McCarthy, where there's a little light bell goes on, there's a little, little sort of ting goes off in your head, and you think, he's actually, in No Country for Old Men, he's actually talking about the older ways, But he's also it's also implied that there's a chaos coming. The state can't handle it anymore. And this is where we are. But there's a stabilizing factor in all of this is the state itself. It's this it's the policies of the powerful that brought this upon us. Now, if you want to say this was incompetence or if it was malicious, that's a debate that I've had. I tend to view it as being malicious. The very best they could go for would be criminal negligence. That's the best they could hope for. And so at the end of the day, we are heading into some pretty bleak times, and we all know it. We all feel it. And nobody seems to know what to do about it. I don't think the government knows what to do about it. And all they'll do is keep going on. And then the people who are saying this is what has to happen, you can take some tough decisions now in order to prevent more misery down the line. These are the people who get attacked, get snuffed out, get ever. So I just thought it was funny how all of this seems to come together. When we seem to be heading more and more now back into a state of nature in England in a way that we don't know, which is like has been a millennia since we've seen anything like it. So keep your loved ones close, have a tribe, have a network, and hope that sense prevails. But ultimately, this is where we're going. Take care out there, everybody, and I'll catch you later.